Welcome back, one and all, to another day here at the Damage Report with me, John Iderola, and joining us, the Galaxy Brain, Ben Carollo. How's it going, Ben?
It's going great. How about yourself?
I don't know.
As good as America. It can be, probably. Like, you know, it's we're still in living the United States in the year 2022.
It's like, you know, like you were on the ground and the Supreme Court was like punching you, and like they've temporarily stopped punching you, but like they've promised like next spring I'm gonna really lay into you. So it's like you feel better, kind of. I don't know. How have you been?
Pretty much the same. I mean, you know, being a trans woman in the United States in this year, it's really exciting to wonder whether or not my existence will be legal in like 2 or 3 years from now. So it's really fun stuff, you know.
Yeah, you know, I tweeted something I considered fairly innocuous in that area last night, and I'm not even gonna say who, some people who have a show tried to draw me into a debate this morning about it. I just thought, not today, Satans. not interested in it.
Yeah.
Not interested in it anyway. I feel really bad for Dave Rubinson and Jordan Peterson. That's who I feel bad for in America these days. I think there's not enough attention given to really rich people who are constantly on shows. I think that we should think more about them. Who will think of the richies? Yeah. Anyway.
Seriously, that's the real problem of our time, you know?
Exactly. There's a lot of people who they think they're doing something, but what they're really fundamentally doing is playing the violin as the Titanic sinks below the surface of the sea. Anyway, with that said, we've got a lot that we're gonna talk about through the course of the show. So thank you for joining us. You chose a good one. There's a lot of insanity going on in the country. And through the course of this show, we're gonna be giving you some updates on what happened in Highland Park and how it was allowed to happen. One world political leader goes down, another is looking real shaky at the very least. And we got monuments being blown up, we've got fictional KKK, we've got a lot of stuff for you. So you're gonna wanna hold on to your butts, prepare yourself as we launch into this. And along the way, if you wouldn't mind hitting the like button, sharing the stream, sending us comments, tweets, super chats, all that, Ben and I will respond as we go. But with all that said, are you ready to start the show?
It's going.
Let's do it. By the way, just to start off on a happy note, Joe Willis just sent a super chat that said, the show has been on for less than a minute before Ben's amazing laugh made an appearance. Brings me so much joy. We need that sort of joy, America, especially as we launch into our first topic. So let's do it. More details are coming out about the murderer in Highland Park, how exactly he was able to get the weapons that he used to kill so many people. And now there's this new element having to do with his father. His father has spoken out. We can't show you the footage, unfortunately, because of local news and all that. But he says that he raised his son with good morals. He said he's also not worried about a criminal investigation into his own potential culpability after he signed off on the what it was called an FOID, the firearm owner's ID affidavit, a thing that is necessary to get a firearm in that state, to go through the background check process and all that. We're gonna dive into a lot of the details about that and whether perhaps there should be some culpability. But I wanna start off with, Ben, I know that if you were to grow up, to have a child, the child grows up and then they commit a horrendous act like that, I can't even conceive of what that experience must be like. And so I generally approach this sort of thing with, I'm not necessarily going to jump in and judge this person and their choices without a lot of evidence. But I also believe nobody in America needs you to come out today and say, no, he had good morals after he killed a bunch of people. I just feel like you cannot say anything. I think that's an option that you could take in the immediate aftermath of this. Funerals are still being scheduled, you know, and all that. So I feel like you just wait a little bit. I don't know, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, when you have a family member that does something like horrific, right? Like, You know, like we shouldn't be like going to people saying, you know, we demand that you condemn like your family member, but like also be respectful and just maybe shut up, right? Maybe shut up, maybe like visit them when they're in jail if you really care for them, and then kind of just like leave it at that and recognize that like, wow, this is somebody that I care for and they did something that is absolutely undefensible and horrific and nightmarish. If you still feel like you want to maintain a relationship with them, that does not require you to defend them in any way, shape or form. It especially doesn't require you to make public statements about their supposed good moral character. You know, I think that speaks to sort of another level. I mean, there's like a whole layer to this. Like, look, in our society, we view racism as something that's just this normal background baseline thing. If there's some edgy teenager saying the N-word on Xbox Live, like you have a lot of parents that are like, well, that's just kids being kids. And in this case, we're seeing this to the extreme degree.
Yeah, 100%. And I get that maybe he's just trying to say that like I tried to raise him with good morals. But again, look, I know that you gotta be feeling really defensive or whatever, but this really isn't about you. You don't need to make it about you. And the issue isn't about what message he's putting out. It's about the choices that were actually made, which understanding that all of what we're about to dive into is preliminary. It is possible that some of this could be nuanced or whatever, but when you start to look into it, it's looking like, hey, maybe something could have been done. Because a lot of people are pointing out that there are versions of red flag laws in that state and oh no, they failed. Some on the right will then say, well, then there's no point in having them. That's insanity to me. And also, by the way, they don't even want them to exist. So when they're critiquing their effectiveness or whatever, understand that they don't want them to be there. The issue is, damn, this person for whom it seemed like there were so many outward signs that they were someone who might commit an act of violence, it didn't catch them. But maybe it should have. Maybe if people had been responsible, if they had done what they should have done, it could have. And to that, I'm not purely hypothesizing. Let's dive into what actually happened. So as we pointed out in the intro, the father in this case, Bob, sponsored his son's firearm owner's identification card 2.5 years ago. This is despite the fact that there had been two instances of police being called to their home over threatening behavior. And we're gonna describe what those actually look like and try to figure out, using common sense, would you, following these instances, have made it possible for your child to buy a gun? So the Illinois police are saying, based on when that application came in January 2020, there was insufficient basis to reject it. Okay, that again could be nuanced. Maybe they knew more than they're admitting to, but for right now, we're gonna focus on the dad. So the dad at the time knew that police had been called to their home twice earlier that same year because his son had threatened to kill himself and the rest of his family. Back in April of 2019, an individual contacted the Highland Park Police Department a week after learning of the son's attempted suicide. And months later, in September of that year, a family member reported that that kid had a collection of knives and said he was going to, quote, kill everyone. The police responded to this. They went to the residence. They removed 16 knives, a dagger, and a sword from the home. At the time, though, they said there was no probable cause to arrest and no complaints were signed by any of the victims. Now, all of that being true, knowing that your son has talked about suicide, has talked about killing other people too, to then make it possible for them to buy a gun, that's already enough for us to have a major issue with. But look at this out of detail. Apparently, the father claimed that all of those knives were his and they were being stored in the individual's, the son's closet for safekeeping. Based upon that information, the Highland Park police gave the knives back. So not only were the threats to self and others potential cause to trigger red flag laws, assuming someone around this person lets the authorities know, but to effectively cover up who owned all of those weapons, the fact that at least a knife and sword arsenal had been accrued, for you to actively deceive the police to make it impossible for them to do their job and to weed out people who might be a threat of violence, Ben, that's where just saying the red flag laws failed is not going nearly far enough. Why did they fail? Well, they failed seemingly because the father caused them to fail. He hid evidence. He made it possible for this kid to get those guns.
Yeah, I mean, and I would go a layer further, because the reality is, and this is something that I talk about a lot, which is just the fact that like ultimately laws only matter to the extent that they are enforced. So a red flag law is only going to be as good as the police department that's enforcing it. And unfortunately, in the United States of America, it seems as though police tend to sympathize more with people like white nationalists and like these violent right winger types, then they, you know, empathize with basically anybody else. So when they see in this circumstance, they see a dad, right? And they're like, oh, he's just like me, and he's, you know, doing this, that, or other thing. He's taking care of his kid. Oh, he'll, don't worry about it. And they see themselves, right? They're empathizing more with these people than the potential victims of this violence. And it is this sort of patriarchal mindset that exists within police forces, right? And this white supremacist mindset that exists within police forces, where instead of thinking about the people that would potentially be victimized by individuals like this person who later, you know, committed a mass shooting, they're thinking about how much they relate to these individuals. And so fundamentally, yeah, these red flag laws are not going to make a difference unless we also pair it with like real reformation and restructuring of our policing system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and also like definitely structurally in terms of law enforcement, yeah, but also I think we can all agree that this father, I think, objectively made a lot of mistakes at the very least. And those mistakes, you know, plausibly a line can be drawn between that and people losing their lives. I don't think the father needed any guidance or training to have done the right thing in these cases. But I think we also socially and culturally could start to let people know to maybe be on the lookout for this sort of thing, not just to stop mass shootings from happening, but to be, I don't know, a little bit more compassionate about the people around you. We live in very difficult times and they're only getting worse seemingly on a daily basis. Maybe we should start to watch out for each other. In this particular case though, I wanna raise one additional point. There's a few other things we're gonna dive into, but one is, and maybe this is a failing of mine that I respond so often and repetitively to stupid points that I hear constantly. So this killer had a bunch of knives, a sword and all that, and then went through the trouble of getting this FOID, doing the background checks and getting a gun. Now, the system failed and didn't weed out the person at that point, but plausibly it could have. They could have, in the process of doing those background checks, looked into this person more and maybe stopped them from committing their crime. So why did the shooter go to all of this trouble to get the gun when some people will assure us they could have killed as many people with the knives they already had, the sword they already had? If those weapons were just as deadly, why'd go to all the trouble and expense and potentially be discovered and stopped from committing your evil acts in getting the guns? Of course, reasonable people understand that because they couldn't have possibly done the damage that they did with a knife or with a sword. But just in case there's an idiot watching this, I wanted to respond to that. By the way, additional details being revealed. Apparently, the Highland Park shooter also seriously contemplated doing a shooting in Madison. Had like driven there and then contemplated, but apparently decided that they hadn't done enough planning at this point or something like this. So there could have been an even higher death toll before this person was eventually discovered. So I guess, Ben, at least there's a little bit of good news that that didn't happen. This person could have, you know, gone out in a, you know, a misplaced blaze of glory, shooting even more people. It's good that at least it was stopped at some point.
Yeah. But I mean, that really just speaks to like the failures that existed. Everything, like everyone failed, right? Everyone failed in this instance, right? Like the parents failed, the police failed, like everybody failed in this instance, because there were clearly warning signs. There were clearly things that led up to this. I've even seen like reporting that he had got kicked out of a synagogue previously, yeah, because they thought he was suspicious, right? And so like, these types of things, right? They're like plenty of warning signs, but unfortunately, our society, when our systems of enforcement see a young white man doing things like this, they are more likely to be like, oh, well, but think about like, oh, maybe he's got a hard life, or like this, that, or the, maybe he was bullied or whatever. But no, actually, when things like this happen, you actually need to like step in and do something and not just, you know, mope around and try and empathize with the person.
Exactly. Yeah. No, you know who had a hard life? The victims and the victims' families and friends. They have a hard life. You know, has a hard life. Virtually everyone on some level has a hard life. As far as I know, you Ben, you've never you've never shot up a place, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I never shot up a place or whatever. I don't think that's asking too much. Coming out of the Highland shooting, one has to wonder what lesson, if anything, anyone will draw from this. And I don't want to focus too much on just one piece of media, but sometimes you see something that you feel like you just have to respond to. And I believe, Ben, that you responded to this on Twitter as well. I saw this tweet from NPR. It says, it appears the Highland Park shooting suspect has no ideological or political bent. Yet extremism researchers say these acts may actually be part of a troubling new trend, one that involves dark subcultures that glorify violence and foster nihilism. Oh, well, then that's the only thing to worry about. These dark subcultures that have no ties whatsoever to anything political. I'm not even saying that they necessarily have to have some sort of direct causal constant 100% verifiable link. But the idea that there's no linkages, there's no Venn diagram that we can diagnose the overlap there. To say this person, because they apparently went to Trump rallies, had the Trump flag, whatever, also might have at one point called themselves a liberal. I mean, Dave Rubin calls himself a liberal. I don't understand why someone calling themselves that when it is not reflected in any way in their life is supposed to mean anything. And by the way, more information is coming out every day from people who knew this person and said that they did not just go to one Trump rally. They had been involved in these groups. So we'll see as more of that comes out. But Ben, the idea that we come out of this and literally if there's anything that interrupts a 100% pure narrative, well then, we can't say anything. We don't know anything. There is nothing that can be learned from this other than that there's some dark stuff that happens online. And I find it deeply depressing that that is what some, like NPR, we're supposed to consider them serious and reputable. We're supposed to be able to have some sort of respect for them, expectations for them. They're coming out of it saying, what are you gonna do? Nothing political to be learned from this.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, I think it all stems from this, the media, right? Mainstream media outlets go out of their way to bend over backwards to give undue credit to right wingers. And which is why, like, this is an explicit tactic that, like, the extreme right uses. They say that they're being racist ironically. They will post Nazi memes and say, oh, it's just a meme, bro. It's just ironic. It's just a meme. Oh, I mean, I'm at this Trump rally, but it's, like, so ironic, right? Mm-hmm. But it's not though, it's not. They say it's ironic as a way to like inject it into the mainstream. That's the whole point, right? Of course, if you run around saying you're a Nazi, people are gonna correctly hate you because you're a terrible person. But somehow when the media sees people like posting like Pepe memes and saying that they're like, oh, you know, they're just saying this Nazi stuff ironically, then all of a sudden that like teeny tiny bit of pretense is enough for so many people in the media to be like, oh, well, I guess they're just being ironic. Like, and it's just terrible reporting. And it just, I think, stems to this like core belief among a lot of people in the media that feel like you have to take right wingers at face value, that you have to take everything they say at face value and not think maybe for a second that they might be being dishonest or manipulative in some way.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember a great example of that from a couple of years ago was when the okay symbol was going around and some people, I mean, they weren't really white supremacists. They were just doing it to make other people think that they were white supremacists. So like the joke's on you. And I would ask the audience, do you know the difference between doing the okay symbol because you're an actual white supremacist and doing it because you think the idea that you'd be a white supremacist is funny? Because if you do, I'd love to know what it is. Because it sounds like you think this stuff that is life and death for a lot of people is just a joke for you. And I would say that while that may not be exactly at the same point on the white supremacist spectrum as some others, it ain't on the good side of it. I don't think people who take this stuff seriously and understand how life and death it is think that it's fodder for little casual funny jokes. But maybe that's just me. We'll close this segment with one other bit of good news. Apparently, the shooting at Highland Park, and by the way, the other mass shootings that happened on that same day, it was not the only mass shooting. This is America after all. We have, you know, we contain multitudes of mass shootings. Could have been worse. Police actually stopped in Richmond, Virginia, a planned July 4th mass shooting after they got a tip that led to the arrest of two people and the seizure of multiple guns. They had apparently been targeting what's called Dogwood Dell, a local amphitheater in Richmond, Virginia. They say that this citizen overheard a conversation where the attack was being planned. And officers responded to that tip, went to the location and seized two assault rifles, a handgun, and hundreds of rounds of ammunition from a residence where the firearms and related material were in plain view. We don't know much more aside from that in terms of motivation, how they got the weapons, what the exact content of the weapons were. But we could have had another mass shooting on that same day, Ben. So good work there, both in terms of the individual who, unlike the father in this other case, took it seriously, and the police who actually stopped this from happening.
Yeah, it's just like, it's just so wild because like literally there was a mass shooting. There were like four mass shootings that day. One of them is like a mile, was like a mile from where I live in Minneapolis. And it's just, I mean, it's just really like terrifying. But like, unfortunately, this is the type of violence that the United States was built on. I mean, quite literally, the 4th of July, what it represents is one of the main reasons why the colonizers declared independence was because King George signed an agreement with indigenous folks to say that they weren't going to expand beyond the Appalachians, right? And that agreement apparently enraged the founding fathers so much that they declared independence just so that they could keep expanding their genocidal program. And so the unfortunate reality is this is reflective of some of the roots of like American society that we've never really dealt with.
100%. Yeah. And look, you mentioned earlier, we probably should have also thrown this in with the NPR thing, but you mentioned that this person clearly had, there was aspects of clear murderous anti-Semitism as well. They had just gone to a synagogue earlier and then thankfully did not shoot up that place, but they shot up an area that has a large Jewish population. Like again, the ideology, like in the same way that we haven't grappled with, as you were saying, some of the legacies of colonialism, like the deep anti-Semitism. Like we like to take like one tweet from someone and like digest it and then say, oh good, well, we've dealt with the anti-Semitism. No, we have not. The roots run deep and they are very accepted, even by some people who pretend to have issues with tweets or whatever. One final point I want to make, I mentioned this in our production meeting this morning. So to the people like the Alex Joneses and the Marjorie Greens, who believe that literally every mass shooting is a false flag, including, by the way, the one in Highland. Marjorie Greene was saying that on her show that she has for some reason. What about this one? What happened? The government went to all the trouble of arming these two individuals, giving them weapons and hundreds of rounds of ammunition. Then what, the people that the FBI chose just oopsie doopsie, we mentioned it in public and the whole thing was sprung. But wait, but I thought the whole government was in on this. So like, was this one not a false flag? Like, can it not be a false flag as long as it stopped? Is it only a false flag as soon as it happens? Did the government just like, oops, we messed up, what a goof? How exactly does that work in the ones that actually get stopped? None of this makes any sense.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's like a whole nother thing about how right wingers like, I mean, because the thing is, right, they don't believe that. They don't actually believe that it's a false flag. They just wanna find some way to either blame the government or blame the left for mass shootings so that they can justify further violence. But as soon as the further violence happens, then they turn around and pretend, oh, it was the left that did it, or oh, it was, you know, this false flag operation to create even further justification. It's just this self-serving lie that, once again, I think a lot of people take at face value, but it serves a very clear political purpose for the right wing that is very dangerous.
Yeah, and I would also say, and this is something we occasionally talk about, that the more deranged the theory that you begin to hear from people in positions that are supposed to be serious, like a congresswoman, like a Marjorie Greene, or like from a Tucker Carlson, in continually spreading absolutely insane, impossible theories, you make a mockery of the idea that politics is a serious thing that one could talk about seriously, that one could think about seriously, that has real world serious consequences. You train your audience to think that everything is fair game, everything gets to be a joke that we all get to make fun of. And that's fine for their side. After all, Tucker Carlson and Marjorie Greene have already won the game. They're rich and powerful. They don't need anything to change, and they would very much like for it not to. But if you are someone for whom you have not yet won, that you have been left behind, that you are losing ground economically, things don't get to just be effing games to you, because you can't win playing games. It has to be serious. We have to identify actual problems. We have to figure out the solutions. We have to actually persuade people to do them. We have to be serious. And all along the way, they make a mockery of the idea that any of this even could be serious. Okay, everybody, let's jump into what we were actually just discussing during our social break. Let's jump into this.
Thank you. It is clearly now the will of the Parliamentary Conservative Party that there should be a new leader of that party and therefore a new Prime Minister. And I've agreed with Sir Graham Brady, the chairman of our backbench MPs, that the process of choosing that new leader should begin now. So I want to say to the millions of people who voted for us in 2019, many of them voting Conservative for the first time, thank you for that incredible mandate, the biggest Conservative majority since 1987, the biggest share of the vote since 1979. And the reason I have fought so hard in the last few days to continue to deliver that mandate in person was not just because I wanted to do so, but because I felt it was my job, my duty, my obligation to you to continue to do what we promised in 2019.
And so, as they say, including in our audience, them's the breaks, I guess. You just saw a political leader, for the most part, in most ways, step down as a result of scandals and poor performance and terrible explanations for the actions and a whole lot of things. There were actual consequences. They can still exist, if only in the UK. Now, Boris Johnson, who is like apparently planning to stick around, and we'll get like in some ways, and we'll get into what exactly he might be doing that for and what he might be getting out of that, is resigning as both the Prime Minister of the UK as well as the leader of his party. He says that he tried to persuade his colleagues that it would be eccentric to change leaders currently, noting that the Tories are only a few points behind in the polls. Says, I regret I was unsuccessful in those arguments, blaming the party's herd instinct for his defenestration. One of my favorite words, it's so rarely used these days. But anyway, it follows a couple of really bad days for him in terms of people jumping ship. 59 members of his ministers had resigned at the time of his remarks. And that began like less than 48 hours ago. And we also recently found out that he had named a Conservative MP to his government, despite apparently being aware of previous sexual misconduct allegations. That is apparently a thing that, like in America, will not necessarily stop you from getting a position, but unlike in America, is something bad enough to be used against you. It's a scandal that people actually would care about and might result in you stepping down. So in any event, even as late as last night, he had been saying he planned to stick around. They always say that up until literally the sentence where they resign. It doesn't mean anything. But he is leaving. So Ben, what do you make of it?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's gonna be really interesting. Like, I guess like the most interesting component of this to me is where the Labour Party is gonna go in the UK, because they've taken like a pretty hard right turn and unfortunately seem to be learning the wrong lessons from the Democratic Party in the United States by squeezing out more left figures like Jeremy Corbyn. And I think this might be an instance of Labour failing upwards. I'm afraid they might take this as evidence that like it was like a good idea to sort of squeeze out the more left elements within their party, as opposed to just recognizing it to be the failure of the Conservatives in the UK and purely the failure of the Conservatives of the UK. So maybe they go into this sort of brinksmanship that we see in the United States, where the left and right both challenge each other to see how terrible they can get.
That'll be fun. I think that that's a good read. Look, I would say, I guess to some extent, this is good, I suppose, as a counter reaction to even the historic wins that he was talking about there. By the way, I get that you would do this, what he said at the close of those remarks that we showed you, but it feels a little bit less deranged, but a little bit Trumpy to me. Like, you're stepping down right now, dude. So like pointing out that things had gone well for you just a couple of years ago, that makes it worse, not better. Like if you had won, a very narrow, tenuous majority, and then were forced out a couple of years later. That's bad enough. But you overwhelmingly then were forced out. Do you see how that makes it worse, Boris? But apparently not. He's an eternal optimist, I guess. And look, there's a lot that I don't know about Boris Johnson. I would say virtually everything. I would say, look, obviously his enthusiastic support for, you know, the splitting apart, you know, the UK and the EU and all that, that to me is enough to celebrate at least a little bit for him stepping out. But there's nothing I like more on the damage report than admitting when I've reached the limit of my knowledge of a topic, and I've never considered myself much of an expert on UK politics. And I'm going to be completely honest to those living in the UK right now. Things have gotten so bad here in America over the past couple of years that even I, a person who tried to stay abreast with the politics of a number of other countries, who in graduate school took quite a bit of international relations classes, I have a harder time focusing on it considering how dire things have gotten here in the US.
Yeah, it's like being on a crashed airplane. You got to put your own mask on first, and we're just living that every single day. You know,
yeah.
It's like,
and it's a bad thing, by the way. We need solidarity. You know, across now more than ever, probably. And so it's an impulse that I try to fight. But anyway, really fast, I want to give you a couple more details, just that that we've got prepared that I think are fun. Asked who should replace him, one MP said anyone. My mom is free. I love that. Anyway, and then finally, I love this so much. So why stick around as like caretaker or whatever for a few months until September, until October, or whatever the timeline is supposed to be? Well, they say one potential explanation is that he and his wife want to host a party at Chequers, this like 16th century manor house. It's owned by the, like, that's, is that why? That couldn't possibly be why. It's so small-minded. It's so personal. That couldn't possibly be. Well, no, that actually tracks. I could sort of see that. I could see Trump doing that here. Why not? Sophie is saying, the invitations have already been sent, John. Well, then I guess, sure. Then in that case, I mean, you can't reschedule. You can't, aren't they digital? Couldn't you just update the location? But apparently that's why. And I assume that right now, I mean, there is a scramble going on both inside of the Conservative Party and then obviously, as you were pointing out, in the opposition to put something together. It's going to be interesting to see where that goes. Any other thoughts?
No, I don't know. I just think that's funny. That's just so funny. But like, you know, we got to have a party first, right? You know, we got to have a party first. Real priorities right here. This is, you can tell, you know, he's somebody that was always prioritizing the average working class person in the UK, you know?
Well, it is sort of perfect specifically for Boris Johnson that if this is the reason, that it would be his desire for a massive party that would be causing him to stick around considering the scandals and all that. But that said, we do want to, we've given our perspective on this development. We want to give the American rights perspective. So to that end, here's a bit of conversation from Fox and Friends about this.
What has happened over the last, you know, number of months and years is the British people did not trust him. He would say one thing and would do something else, and then would pop up in the tabloids. And then with this thing, it's a question of integrity. He has refused to go, even though people have been calling for him to hit the pavement for a while.
Yeah, and if there's one thing that Fox and Friends can't take, it's a politician who has received a clear message from the voters that they're not wanted anymore, just trying to stick around. They won't accept that, Ben.
It's literally this, it's the Spider-Man meme, right? But that's like, that's all of politics right now. I feel like all of politics in the UK and the United States is just the Spider-Man meme where everybody's pointing at each other. And if it's not that, then it's the hot dog costume. It's the, we're trying to find the guy who did this. And that's just the entire political atmosphere right now.
Yeah, and it's like some might say, well, you got to be fair. What about the Democrats? Okay, well, what about, first of all, we're going to be talking about Biden in just a minute, but seemingly nobody wants Biden to run again, and he's not getting the message. They don't care. They're in it for themselves. They will stick around as long as they want. And along the way, the responsibility that we would have, I would say, in our capacity, and also people like Fox and Friends, is, I don't know, maybe like understand the context a bit, identify differences, and similarities. So for instance, if people started, if people gave a huge mandate to Boris Johnson and then started to have an issue with him because of his weird scandals, need to party constantly, which gives across the idea that he's not taking things seriously, giving a strong signal to the voters that he doesn't take sexual misconduct among the people in his employ seriously, not taking COVID seriously, and also making a weird and self-destructive break with the international community. If they've started to decide that all those things are bad, in the UK, maybe we can understand that people might not like it here in the US either. And so if you're shocked, Ducey, that the people could turn on Boris Johnson, maybe it's not so impossible to imagine that they would turn on Trump for basically those exact same reasons. I don't know. Any other thoughts about it?
That's I don't know. That's impossible. Like, that sounds like pretty radical stuff, John. I don't know. I don't know if it makes sense.
I don't know. We'll have to look into it. With that, let's jump into this video.
Joe Biden's biggest problem right now is he has people on the record named Gavin Newsom, governor of California, named J.B. Pritzker, governor of Illinois, taking him on and flirting with a 2024 run when they've got their own guy eligible to run for a second term. They don't want him. But I would ask them all, what were you expecting?
Well, that is a good question from Kellyanne Conway there. I mean, I wasn't expecting much. I'm a progressive, and the progressives tried to warn people about what Biden would be. But despite the fact that Kellyanne Conway is, and we cannot stress this enough, the worst, she's not super wrong right there. If you watch her full interview, she's wrong about a ton of different stuff. But yeah, Biden is starting to face a lot of questions about why he isn't doing literally anything about literally anything. Even the New York Times has this front page story: Biden promised to stay above the fray, but Democrats want a fighter. And in it, they have a lot of sources, some anonymous, some willing to identify themselves, that are being highly critical of Joe Biden for not rising to the challenge of literally any challenge, and seeming to believe that after 40 plus years of fighting as hard as he can to become president, he should spend the 4 years of what will likely be his only term as president doing literally nothing except trumpeting how limited his powers are and how everything is really up to the Supreme Court, the Congress, the state legislators, the DOJ, whoever. Where does the buck end? I guess at literally everywhere else other than on him. And I want to give you, because I think that they're onto something here, just a little bit from the article that we showed you the front page of. They say, at a moment of broad political tumult and economic distress, Mr. Biden has appeared far less engaged than many of his supporters had hoped. And I think there they mean like enthusiastic supporters. While many Democrats are pleading for a fighter who gives voice to their anger, Mr. Biden has chosen a more passive path, blaming Congress, urging people to vote, and avoiding heated rhetorical battles. And they also criticize Kamala Harris, saying that she said last week that the White House is not considering setting up abortion clinics on federal property, instead calling on voters to change the balance of Congress, which I will remind you, the Democrats control. The administration is also not considering a push to expand the Supreme Court. But we could go beyond even what the New York Times is willing to identify. They're really trying, not at all, basically, on their infrastructure bill to reinvigorate it. I think they're gonna like do another thing on drug prices or whatever, that'll fail. They're not reassuring people about inflation or about gas prices. They're continually punting on doing something about student debt, even though he has unilateral ability to solve that problem. Any discussion of raising wages has gone out the door. He's not reassuring anyone about voting rights or the Dems doing anything to protect the people's access to actually vote. And in terms of people's rights, it's really up to whatever the conservative supermajority on the court decides it should be, because they're not gonna reform the Supreme Court. So a lot of people have big issues with Joe Biden. Ben, the question is this getting to him? Will he actually change? Can he actually change in the face of this pressure? I mean,
look, we gotta rip the bandaid off. This is what Joe Biden wants. This is what Joe Biden has wanted his entire career, right? He spent tons of time, right, trying to overturn Roe v. Wade. He's spent tons of time trying to make sure that people can't, you know, declare bankruptcy on their student loans. He spent tons of times like putting in place the exact measures that led up to this, right? Talking about the hot dog man meme, that's literally this. Joe Biden created this, right? Like the difficult position that Joe Biden is in right now is he has to figure out a way to pretend that he's unhappy about everything that's happening, right? Because he has plenty of power to deal with all of these problems. He just likes it. This is what he wanted. And what Kellyanne Conway said, shockingly enough, is 100% correct. To all the people who are telling me that it was such a brilliant galaxy brain strategy to vote for Joe Biden of all people in the primary, what were you expecting? What else were you expecting? We were the ones who were, that were told that we were dividing the party or we're gonna cost the Democrats the election by correctly pointing out that Joe Biden's entire career has been pushing for the exact things that the Republicans are getting and wanting right now. Joe Biden created these circumstances. Joe Biden pushed for that crime bill. Joe Biden literally shocked, was it Ronald Reagan or Richard Nixon, with how like gratuitous like his ideas for the crime bill were. Like he literally is like this extremist right wing figure and people are just unwilling to recognize it because he has a D by his name. And it's just like, it's really like shameful, right? Because especially in this moment, like Joe Biden's response to police reform, for example, has been to increase police budgets and that's it, right? And like when people were protesting the Supreme Court, before any protest even happened, he went out of his way to be like, don't be violent, don't be violent. Nobody was being violent. Nobody was talking about being violent. Like it's such a weird like mental gymnastics you're doing to like create justification in advance for police officers to brutalize peaceful protesters like they did across the country. And so, I mean, yeah, what did anybody expect? What did anybody expect, right?
Exactly.
Like this is exactly what Joe Biden's whole career has been.
Yeah, they knowingly or unknowingly signed up for 4 years of not much happening except them continuing to tell us not to criticize Joe Biden because then you'll make him lose. It's on us. We're the ones who are responsible for whether he loses, not him. But and again, like it doesn't matter if we get any credit and we won't clearly, but can we stop for 1 second and acknowledge that we're right fundamentally and that we weren't just right in hindsight? We were right when it mattered. We were right early. We could have chosen someone different to run and we might have gotten a different outcome. Maybe Bernie would have run up against all the same obstacles and that would have been it, maybe. But then worst case scenario, we're in the same position we're in right now. And right now, more and more people seem to be getting it. And even a lot of Biden voters don't want him to run again. But there are still some very vocal people on Twitter who are, we've already mocked this now, still defending him, saying, how dare you expect anything of him? How dare you expect him to do anything? Certainly don't criticize him. And anytime you suggest literally any course of action that he could take to potentially cause something to change, their only knee-jerk reaction is, that couldn't possibly work. Don't try anything. Don't put pressure on anyone. Don't expect anything. They're no better than right-wing voters at this point, having no hope whatsoever that the government could actually deliver for them.
Yeah, even on an issue where Democrats agree, like guns, right? Joe Biden, a lot of these gun manufacturers have contracts with the Department of Defense. If Joe Biden really cared about guns, he could just sign an executive order requiring any gun manufacturer that has a contract with the with the Department of Defense or any federal agency that they put in place an age requirement of 21 to buy any type of semi-automatic rifle or anything like that. Like literally, like. He could do that with an executive order, but he doesn't.
And a majority is in favor of raising that age, by the way. On all these issues, again, it's not on us to convince people. We already have, we already won. People have our position on all this stuff. It's on him to actually do something. But unfortunately, I think it's very easy for people to point this out about Trump and did, that he wanted to be President Trump. He didn't want to be president. Like he wanted the title and he wanted the pomp and circumstance, he wanted the fame, but he didn't want to actually do the job. We all identified that he didn't seem to care about doing the actual job. But can we do that today with Biden? Can anyone answer the question, why does he want to be president so badly that he would run so many times? I have no idea. Anyway, with that said, we do have to go to our next break because them's the breaks, it turns out, and the breaks timing. So we will be back with more after this. Welcome back, everyone. Okay, let's get into one of the weirdest things we're going to talk about all week, starting with this. What you just saw was the destruction, the bombing, the sabotage of what's called the Georgia Guidestones, which is a monument that I don't think a lot of people are necessarily that familiar with, although it was profiled by John Oliver just a few months ago. Someone apparently blew it up, destroying one of the Guidestones and damaging the others so badly that they were almost immediately demolished, supposedly for safety. I want to give you a little bit more information about the monument that was attacked. It's sometimes called America's Stonehenge. It consisted of several large upright stone blocks built in alignment with stars and constellations, weighing in at 119 tons and containing over 4,000 sandblasted letters spelling out what appears to be lessons for rebuilding humanity in 12 different languages. Some of the advice is, in the words of the Georgia Recorder, controversial. For instance, saying that we should maintain humanity under 500 million in perpetual balance with nature. So, yeah, that sort of thing makes people a little bit uncomfortable. It's a bit eugenicsy. But anyway, they were built back in 1980, commissioned by a mysterious man who used the pseudonym R.C. Christian. We don't actually know exactly who it was, even at this point. But at some point during the night yesterday, someone detonated an explosive device there that is currently being investigated. Footage at the site apparently showed a car. They don't yet, as far as we know, have any suspects. They are searching for them now. But as we will get into, Ben, the thing that makes this even more interesting is that there has always been this weird aura around this, the mystery of not knowing who it is that set it up. But it has also been the focus for many, many years of conspiracy theories, largely coming from the right, that this is some sort of satanic monument or something like that. And as we'll get into, it has very recently been the target of these conspiracy theories leading directly up to its bombing. But what do you make of it?
I don't know. It's such a very American thing, right? It's so wild because like, especially when it comes to like conspiracy theory stuff, you'll have like a lot of people who will do things that are intentionally weird or like nonsensical. And then people will start like making conspiracy theories about it being profound or something. But a lot of the times it's just some weird shameless attempt at being profound, right? Or like being cryptic for no reason. Because like, so I don't really know. I don't know. I don't really know where to place this. Where there's just like seems to be like different crowds that sort of feed off of each other, where they're like intentionally cryptic and then they're like, oh, you know, that's why it's actually this, that, or the other thing. When it's really just like nonsense. But I mean, I don't really know enough about this to know that that's exactly what it is.
Yeah, so but here's the thing, and here's why I'm so focused on this and why I wish we had way more time to talk about this. But by the way, I want to immediately just mention Candace Taylor is one of the candidates recently, this Trumpist candidate, who had been talking about how one of her promises if she got into office was to demolish the Georgia Guidestones. After this attack on them, she tweeted, "God is God all by himself. He can do anything he wants to do. That includes striking down satanic Guidestones." Well, in that case, wouldn't it have been powerful enough to not have them ever be set up in the first place? But anyway, I get that the political stuff gets weird in that it seems like some of this stuff they'd kind of like. It's white supremacy and all that. At the end of the day, this is someone who blew up a monument because of conspiracy theories that they believed about it. And I would argue that someone who is willing to blow up a monument is in theory willing to blow up other things based wholly on evidence-free conspiracy theories. They were told that this is a satanic thing, so they decided to blow it up, which means that we now have on the run a person who can make and use explosives who believes the conspiracy theories they read online. So whether like the political stuff gets a little bit complicated, but I feel like people aren't taking this seriously enough that a conspiracy theory like from the internet led to a thing being bombed. That seems significant to me. I don't know. Any other fast thoughts?
Yeah, no, 100%. And this is like, I mean, the way that these conspiracy theories, one of the reasons why conspiracy theories are so popular and dangerous in the United States is basically because people in the United States, a lot of our popular media presents this idea of anybody saying that the world could or should be a better place. That is to say, anybody that's on the left that wants to change society is secretly this demonic villain that wants to control your life. But at the same time, people see and feel the impact of right-wing policies. Yeah. And they're like, this is miserable. This sucks. Right?
Unfortunately, we're about to run up against our hard out. Maybe we'll talk a little bit more about this on the other side of our break. We do have more show coming, so don't go anywhere, anyone. Little Crybaby Dragon says, Biden promised essentially nothing would change and he is sleepily keeping his promise. Exactly. And by the way, when they're like, they still treat him as if he's some sort of radical. He's not doing literally anything in literally any area. When she says, what did the left expect? The way that she is wrong there is that she thinks Biden is on the left, or she'll at least say it. Fox loves to pretend that this is the person the left wanted.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.